Do you have any new data that we should be looking at, Steven?
Yeah, I added page and I adjusted the ranking one that we already had by adding in the filter. You can see the differences. I mean, it's not very much, but you can see them.
This last one?
The last one and the rankings got updated.
Ranking this one, right?
Yeah.
So this is with averaging.
Yeah, I included all the different sizes so you guys can see it a lot more immediate.
Oh, okay.
So these are different cache sizes.
Yeah, right? Each line is a different cache size.
Oh, you just reverse the order so that we can see that.
No, 4 gigabyte was done first, then the 2 gigabyte, and then 1 gigabyte was done last. So 1 gigabyte would overlap everything.
Right.
If that's all you see.
Wow. So there is some difference on day one. This is day one, then day two towards the end.
No.
And day three, but there's not
okay.
much difference.
Not much.
There's only one small issue that I still have to get done. You may notice that towards the end of a couple of them, it doesn't have any numbers. That's because it doesn't hit that last...
Here? You mean this guy?
Like, you see all there's space to the right?
Yeah, this one.
Yeah, that's due to how it didn't reach the next 8,000 or so. It didn't average it. I could do something to average whatever is left. I just haven't added that in yet.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So this is a different average mechanism we talked about?
Yeah.
It is the different averaging mechanism.
You'll notice it's also kind of slope-ish. I don't know how to do how to make it more of a step in new plot right now. And you'll see the same stuff when we get to the rankings.
And what's the average size?
The size is at 4 gigabytes.
No, is it there with the granularity?
The granularity is still 8,000 as in the previous one.
So that's the bean size. So every 8,000,
there's an average.
Calculate one value.
Yeah,
every 8,000, one value, right?
Yeah, I'll get an average. I add up whatever's in the array and divide it by the granularity to get an average.
Okay. And here did we talk about taking a derivative of this guy? Or have you gotten around to taking derivatives of these?
No, we can see derivatives anyway, so it's just a difference, right? So
the derivatives of that would just be go at it every 8,000 or so, whatever G is, and seeing how much we've changed.
Right.
So.
Are there any significant changes is what I'm looking for. So, for instance, this guy here seems to be a phase change up here.
Mm-hmm.
All of this stuff. And then you go into a smaller area. But here's the catch, right? Here, it's not clear if you are in a phase or you're still doing a phase change because you go back up and have a lot more misses and then finally you get to come down to a zero. The definition of a phase here is it's difficult to extract. I think that's part of the problem. It's not clean, right? There's
yeah.
a lot of... and there is a phase change, and there is no phase change. There is still a lot of variation in how the miss rate behavior is. Of these plots, which is the most clean? On this one, it's not this one. In be this guy.
What's the difference between different roles? What's the difference here and here?
Each one is
all different
his own,
days.
Oh,
one,
different days.
Day,
okay.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Are on the bottom.
That's
the
right here.
Yeah.
Seven, eight, nine.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're different data. And what happened to this?
There are fewer accesses or no. Actually, there's a lot more here than here and here. So there are some days that have fewer, much fewer accesses. So the weekend or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you get to the last two, there's only like, what, 60,000 or 70,000?
We are looking at access number, right? So
I'm not sure what's happening in those days. Why are there so few accesses?
What is this day?
15. That's 15.
15 is, that means the January, February 15. Is that what it is?
No. You have to look at the paper to see when it was collected.
No.
So there are fewer here and a lot more here. Then more, fewer again, more, fewer.
80,000, 70,000, 60,000. That's 250,000. What's that about?
Well, there are some in the millions. There's
350,000. 350,000, so it's just the number of...
Accesses.
Accesses are
so, for instance, here there are 4 million. You see? A lot more accesses.
Right. Yeah, so that's 1.2
million.
Oh.
4 million. 4 million.
One for each day?
Yeah. 2 million. 4 million. 2.5 million.
Oh. This is a home, right?
Yes, it's a home.
So it's just, I mean, homes could be that. There was no one, there was very few people working on those days. Because homes is a, you know, combination of all the different accesses of different students.
Oh.
So all the homes put together.
It's the file server, you say?
It's a file server, yeah. So the students are pretty unpredictable. Maybe we should look at one of the other trees.
Yeah.
Because these are all...
But these trees...
And the thing is that here, the thing is, if you have a large group, this is only 4 or 5 different people.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
If you have like 100 people, then there may be some pattern, but...
Yeah.
But it's 4 or 5
if this
people,
is
especially
a home...
some people are working only at night and other people are working only in the daytime, and then you mix everything together.
Yeah, it's a small group. If it's the home directory for the entire department,
then
that's different, right? You will see some effect in the day of the week, right? So obviously Sunday it's not as easy as other days.
Which other ones do you have besides homes?
I downloaded another one. I'm having trouble remembering what the name of it was.
Was it mail?
I think it might have been
WebVM. There's one WebVM.
There's WebVM. Right.
I think I downloaded a mail one. I did that first when we agreed to work on homes in particular.
Yeah, because homes is the smallest one. Actually, WebVM may be even smaller than homes.
WebVM is not as big.
So. Mail is huge.
So,
might take some time processing.
But that's the what is WebVM? It's the web server, right?
It's two web servers in our department. One is the Moodle, and the other is Web Research or something. One was online.cs, the other one was webresearch.cs, which hosts based a bunch of different research projects.
Right, yeah. But those are just
those
web,
are,
right?
Yeah, those are just web.
Yeah, those are just web. And the... The Moodle might be a little bit more interesting.
And the thing is, the Moodle, the problem is that the data for the Moodle portal is in a file server. So what we are looking at is just local web logs, not the actual data that is being served out of Moodle, because that is being pulled out of some file server which we didn't trace. Does that make sense to you?
It's not the file server, you're saying.
So we didn't trace the file. They won't let us trace the file server.
Okay.
Eventually, they let us trace Bear, which was a file server, but trying to see where the traces for that are. It's probably out there somewhere. It's huge, too. So, but what we did trace for the... So think about, you know, you're installing a web server on your machine. All the logging infrastructure, everything is on that machine. But when you want to serve data, you're pulling it over an NFS connection.
Right, yes.
Our tracer will not see it.
Okay.
Because it's operating at the block level.
Right.
So the WebVM trace is only local file server, web server logging activity.
Do we have any data from some other repository that has... because eventually this will come to studies of, say, a virtual environment or something like that has application, a good mixture of applications representative of, say, cloud services or something.
There is a bunch of additional enterprise traces from Microsoft that we could also analyze. So let's do the following, Steve. We start maybe with web VM, and then we can move to mail. And in the meanwhile, you might want to start downloading some of those Microsoft traces. I'll send you a pointer, several of them.
Thank you.
And then we can look at them as well. Those are more realistic environments, more production than what we have here.
But that's more, supposedly, the target, right? More representative, maybe.
It is, yeah, it is more representative. The only thing that I'm now thinking is, if you have workloads like this where you're combining a bunch of different kinds of activity together, the phases are going to overlap. Right, and changes are going to overlap. So you might not be able to clearly identify phases, just like here, we are not able to.
Oh, this is just aggregate. Yeah, it has to be something more of a detailed analysis for that. So let me ask you a question. As a matter of fact, I encountered this question when I was thinking about this. So in the cache algorithm, the eventual cache algorithm we're going to have, say we have that cache algorithm, supposedly. What's the input?
The input is just a set of axes to some storage volume.
So is it just LBAs? That's just the I/O streams?
Yeah.
Does that come with other information?
It'll come with, say, read-write. It'll come with block address. It'll come with time. You'll be online. You'll be doing this online, right?
Right, yeah,
so you'll be receiving requests. Would
you know that what process that generated that request? For example, because your trace has those data, but I'm not sure whether eventually your cache decision-making
may or may not have that information, because let's say you're putting this in a storage box. Then storage box, this, you know, would speak... to one of two protocols. One is a file protocol and the other is a block protocol. In both cases, you don't have process information because you have clients on the other side that
just send requests.
They don't care about, you know, which could potentially tag the request additionally on the client side and so that you can have that information on the storage side. You could do that. But by default, it doesn't happen today.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
If we do it on the host side, we do it the host side flush, then you would have that information.
Because the interface contains it?
Actually, no. It depends on whether the host is virtualized or not. If the host is virtualized, then you lose process information. You'll have which VM it is coming from.
Oh, you don't have.
But you won't have a process, which may be good enough.
Yeah. Well, yes or no. But yeah, that's one piece of information anyway. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you could potentially assume that you have that information, especially if you're applying this algorithm on the host side.
Right.
Hello? That was probably last week. I didn't call today or yesterday. Yeah. Okay, bye. Yeah.
Right. So, okay.
Okay, so the reason I'm asking for that is because this analysis, as you can see, I guess moving to other traces, probably the situation will get worse. Because what happens, you get a bigger mixture of processes of different things. I mean, here, as a matter of fact, the number of processes there are sort of a few heavy hitters there. Some the journaling, you know, in the kernel, you know, doing this sort of things. So they have a certain behavior which is consistent across. So those are, you know, you can remove that as a noise or treat that as something that you can differentiate from others. But if you have a bigger mixture with the, say, the Microsoft, you know, got their cloud services or something like that, there could be, you know, a much more diversity in terms of the processes that are offering this. And in that case, you're probably going to, you know, you don't have it, but, you know, I would expect the behavior of the cache would be more kind of blurred. It's not as prominent as what we can see. Probably we can, you know, if we're really looking at the trace, we can know what's happening here.
Yeah.
We can really sort of try to see what's happening here.
One thing which we can do is this Holmes trace was constructed by merging a set of individual user traces.
Right, yeah. Oh, you mean user means process.
Individual user, not process. Individual user. So the way we constructed this Holmes trace was we traced every user home on separate machines. Then we merged them together.
Oh.
So we have individual user home traces, and then we collected several user home traces and merged, and basically just merged, time-based merging, and created a file server-like trace.
But what about the other traces?
Which other traces?
And the mail and the VM.
Mail, we have only one. It's all merged all because that's how we collected in our department server.
Right.
We didn't have any more information than that.
Right.
But the web VM, we have, I think we have the online
and the
web research separately.
And you merge them.
And we merge them.
Oh.
Actually, if we go to one of these, let's see, I think it's up here somewhere. Okay, this one is already merged. But one of these other guys.
You could find something separated, is that what you're saying?
Online webmail. See, there are two separate, and web research, web users. And these are all different homes.
Okay.
And that's
right.
A single. Actually, web VM is four. Online, web mail, web research, and web users. There are four of them. I said only two.
Okay.
Four. And then there are four homes. All of them mixed together is.
Well, can you mix them?
What? Yeah. Why not? I mean, you know, it's as good as tracing something where all these homes were on an NFS volume.
Right. Would the response be the same?
No. Yeah, the timing would probably change. And timing would change anyway. Even if you change disk in one of the homes, if the timing would change.
Right, yeah.
All right, yeah, but that's the performance of the the volume.
So it might be a good idea to do this analysis for all of these traces individually. Let me send you this. The signature here is probably going to be slightly different than what... Actually, no, it's the same. Oh, yeah. It's probably the same. But you want, you should probably check if it's the same or not. Per machine traces.
Okay. Yeah. So.
Yep. So I think that might actually look more promising. Now, anyway, coming back to how let's say we're able to detect phases better in these individual.
You mean we differentiate them, that somehow we can differentiate the source.
Yeah, and then we detect phases separately, independently for all of these workloads.
Right.
And then we apply the caching algorithm independently for all of these workloads. The one caching algorithm instance per workload.
Yeah.
That might be okay, because anyway... When you host multiple workloads in the same cache, you have to partition the cache across all of these workloads. Otherwise, there isn't cache interference.
Right.
And if you're partitioning the cache, it's as good as running one workload per cache and one caching algorithm per workload.
Yeah, that's gotta be better. Yeah. You can use a small cache. You can whatever that's sensitive enough.
Yeah.
To expose the behavior difference.
Yeah.
Right.
So, on hindsight, it seems stupid that we were looking at all these merged traces. We should have been looking at the individual traces.
Well,
At least we went through the whole exercise.
Better yet,
uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, we can further differentiate.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just a home one, say.
Mm-hmm.
Home one have several processes.
Yeah.
We can actually do this kind of analysis per process. If we can, that's why I asked the question, whether it comes with
that info. Depends on, these traces will have that information, but if it's a VM trace, then you won't have that information. Because the guest VM will just use a virtualized block device, which the protocol doesn't have.
Let's suppose that we can do something about it.
Hmm.
If we can. I mean, just as a hypothetical. If we can somehow get the information, because what eventually going to be the case is to... I don't think we can do better if there are a lot of processes. We're only trying to improve just a little bit about the small process, which has maybe 1% of the contribution to the cache behavior.
Yeah.
And we have 100 of them. And then we try to improve. That's probably not going to do any well. As opposed to we find the heavy hitter, right? Some dominant computing intensive stuff that actually requires a lot of data and processing a lot of data. And those heavy hitters are the target of our optimization.
Mm-hmm.
So to identify the heavy hitters, that means there are certain things. One is maybe we require some kind of identification of that where the source is, right? So if you say the source is an entire VM, that's fine as long as in that VM there's a dominant process that's dominate the behavior. That causing the cache to be polluted and requires optimization.
Yeah.
But better yet, it's the process, because it goes through phases that causing all this behavior of the system-wide behavior to change. And we identify that. So I guess just for because right now we have process ID.
We do. I'm not sure, what is the implication of what you're saying, but one issue is that if we identify separate streams within a single, let's say, VM, right, and we apply different caching algorithms to each process,
mm-hmm.
the complication there is that we would now have to run one caching algorithm per process. So this is a caching algorithm that addresses the entire VM because the VM gets a single cache.
Right, yeah.
Right? Processes don't get small,
right.
small caches.
Right.
So there's one caching algorithm that manages one piece of cache,
right.
but that caching algorithm does different thing based on what is the type, what is the properties of a single request, right? So if the request comes from process A, then the caching algorithms behave differently than if the request comes from process B. So it's a more sophisticated and complicated caching
right,
algorithm.
It's a sort of like an index into what cache is. Well, first of all,
it's an interesting direction.
Right. I feel, first of all, running cache algorithm will not do. This is my sort of a internal belief. Because what we see here, maybe this is a result of aggregation.
But this is
maybe the nature of this thing. It's what you look is basically you aggregate all the results, trying to get the rates, right? Average over 8,000, and this is what you get.
In fact, we're looking at probably the worst case of behavior because we're looking at completely random collection of people doing independent things and putting them together and trying to identify faces.
True, yeah. That's what I meant. You have those small contributions of here and
yeah.
there. There's no dominant effect.
Yeah.
There is some dominant process there. I mean, as I show you, I've seen some of the processes, actually.
That's the journaling process, which is the same across all of these guys.
It's basically what it is.
Yeah.
And all the other processes are actually have much fewer contributions.
Depends on which section of the... So, for instance, if those guys are doing some significant... if they're running any significant work, then there may be some file system activity. Otherwise,
right.
it's just logging and
right.
flushing.
Right, yeah. But, yeah,
like
that's
journaling.
True. Yeah. So what I meant here is, first of all, caching, running cache, even though you're running sort of a differentiated cache among different streams of I/O streams coming from different processes, may not really getting the right picture. My view is that actually eventually you have to do some analysis in that those cache streams coming in, say classify that what it is sort of time wise, and be able to sort of say something about the behavioral change of a particular application.
You're talking about an adaptive algorithm. And there are adaptive algorithms out there, right? Like ARC, for instance, is an adaptive algorithm. Because what it does is it dynamically balances how much cache is dedicated to items that are accessed frequently versus items that are accessed recently. Right? And it keeps moving that based on its observations of the workload.
Right. Okay.
Whereas LRU is very simple. Like you
right, yeah, that's
move the
L.
If it's a hit, you move it to the top of the list. If it's not, if it's a miss, then you bring it into the cache and put it in the top of the list. So that's very, it's always does the same thing. But adaptive algorithms can change, how they respond.
Here's my question here.
Hmm.
We are running the cache simulation.
Hmm.
And we're thinking about actually using different cache policies, right, to run it and see what's the response curve of a miss rate and stuff like that. I think that's, to me, I think we should use the simplest cache policy because the goal here is different. All the other cache policies is to hide the effect of faces, like the ARC that you just talked about. Right, it's adaptive algorithm. It can look at the traces, identify frequent access and some others, and so that it will actually reduce the miss rate. accordingly. And if you use those algorithms, we won't detect the phases.
Yeah.
And we should use algorithm to detect. So the purpose of the cache simulation here is for detection. It's not for hiding. In the other advanced cache algorithms, multi-queue and stuff like that, they're hiding.
Yeah. The thing is, even if it's an adaptive algorithm, a phase change is such a significant event that it won't be able to hide. So, which is why I think that even if you switch to a different caching algorithm, say ARC, the phase change event, because you're accessing entirely new data, caching algorithm cannot look into the future, right? And so it will have the same problems as any other algorithm. Any algorithm will have the same problems, that there will be lots of misses because you're accessing data that you've never accessed before, or something along those lines.
Right.
So if we want to detect phase changes, we should probably use the best algorithm.
But why can't...
That can, within a phase, provide the least miss rate and in a stable way, so that phase changes are magnified and highlighted.
Why can't we just look at the trace directly and detect the phase change?
How? I mean,
what I meant is... you will see, one way you see the phase change is maybe the increase in terms of the new addresses that actually being referenced other than what's the old address being referenced.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the working set is changing, it's shifting because it's actually start to move to a different memory allocation, right?
Which is what the miss rate spike tells you also, right? If there's a significant spike in the miss rate, that means entirely new data was accessed, which is why the cache had all these misses.
It takes time for the cache algorithm to show that. I mean, for right now, 8,000 accesses later, you get one data point, which is somewhere else.
Well, one of the issues is that I think we're looking at the wrong traces. And we tried all of these averaging techniques. I think the averaging technique may still be required.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably do this analysis again with the individual traces, and we may be able to go down to a smaller granularity of averaging as well.
Mm-hmm.
And get more accurate results. But I wouldn't know until...
Until we actually do
the analysis.
Let's get the trace first. I think that's important.
Yeah.
Let's get the trace first.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we can get the server trace.
Which
like
Microsoft
server
traces?
Microsoft
traces?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before
Stephen does that, I want him to look at the individual traces. The different homes.
Mm-hmm.
And the different and the four different online web mail, web research, and web users, those traces. Well, you can start with the homes, because I think with the homes you have all the data accessed, but with these online workloads, the web VM workloads, like I said, it's only the local logging that is being traced. The data that is retrieved using NFS doesn't show up in the traces.
Right.
So it's not a very a clean trace to be looking at. But we could look at the homes.
Yeah, the problem with these traces, there are sort of a back-end file server traces,
mm-hmm.
right? They do not necessarily reflect computation. So, for example, you're running a large PDE solver. That kind of application, you know, accessing different, you know, I'm just speculating for computation purposes. It's going to be different, right?
Yeah.
So
it's probably not going to be very IO intensive anyway.
Some large data applications will be very IO intensive, as a matter of fact.
So you mean for checkpointing?
For computation, just for swapping data, right? It's for you know, we're
so
not
it's
saying
not a file system then. It's mostly virtual memory kind of behavior that.
But that causes the
Well, it does use the storage, but...
So when you say phase change,
hmm.
what do you mean by phase change? Why the applications have phase change?
Why do they have phase change? So let's say, I mean, let's think of something real. What? Should we look at Amazon, for instance? If you look at the Amazon server, right? The Amazon server has different trends. So certain items are more popular during certain times. Activity is different during different times of the day. Any change in the set of data that is being accessed. At this point, I don't want to say how the data is being accessed, but let's say just the set of data being accessed changes mm-hmm. is a phase change. And why is a phase change in the case of caching important is because when there is a phase change, the contents of the cache changes. Because earlier, let's say a certain set of data was important, you put it in the cache, and when there is a change of activity, new set of data become more important. Let's say Amazon changed, I don't know, some backend format or some data, then whatever data existed before is no longer useful. So you have to flush everything out, load new set of data. And so application change, even within a single application, there can be different things that the application does at different times.
Right. So that's two things right there. If it's application change, we can't do per application analysis.
Yeah.
It doesn't really help us. If it's an application change behavior in the middle, say accessing different data, that's different.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is, so for instance, a user in the homes, starts working on a project A, which is in a certain directory, and then switches over to an entirely different project.
Right.
And then works with a different set of files, right? So those guys should be in the cache now, as opposed to the previous set of files.
Right.
So that's a phase change.
But in terms of the process that driving the change,
it may not be important, actually. It may not be important. Maybe that you're using, I don't know, GCC at some point, then you're using Emacs or you're using whatever else but you're working with a different set of data using all these different applications.
But in terms of the back end, what we see. So what I meant is right now is, you know, you can see journaling, a journal process. There is a flush, whatever it is, that's, you know, different, sort of different process. Would that actually... They're responding, obviously, to request from the front end, right? The mounted systems.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But what is the process? I mean, it's just like a file server, an NFS server.
It's a file server process.
It
all depends on whether you're looking at the file server case or you're looking at the host case. If it's the host, then it could be a VM.
Right. Say for the home.
In this case,
you
could think of it as this could also be a virtual desktop, right?
Yes.
A virtual desktop kind of situation where everybody has a virtual desktop and they all access whatever they do. They do it through that virtual desktop server. And the virtual desktop server has a local file cache. And all the homes are on a different server. It's a file server that the virtual desktop server connects to.
Right.
Gets the data, but then it also caches it locally in its flash cache, SSD cache, let's say.
Right.
So that's a scenario where here you would have VM-level information about within the traces.
I got you. Okay, so this is like the host side.
Host side.
Right.
Yeah. I think we want to focus on the host side because... actually, we could also do storage-sided. Both applies. All we need is a cache that's not in the data path. So if you have a host side, you have a flash cache that's not in the data path. If it's on the storage side, you could also have flash cache there that's not in the data path. So whatever we are doing would apply to both ends.
Right. But the information, the optimization might be a little bit.
Yeah, you may have
different
kinds of information available.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I got to go get ready for class. But it's good. So, Stephen, you have some idea what needs to be done next? And you need to analyze the Holmes traces?
Yeah, just miss rates.
Miss rates, and then I think whatever you did for the combined home trace, I think we could do it. Take the derivatives also with the after your average. I think doing the averaging the way we talked about last time makes sense. So we'll do it the same way, but we might have to play with the granularities. If you go to individual traces, we might be able to do something smaller. Yeah, but it's depends on how you what you see in the graphs.
Yeah.
I'll let you decide what you want to do in the granular. Okay.
If you have a pointer to the hash for the traces,
I sent you.
Yeah.
I sent you as well.
No, not the Holmes.
Yeah.
Yes,
I will certainly. Yeah.
So I can take a look at that and see.
All the traces are in the SNIA IOTA repository.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, in that paper that you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I can see. Storage network.
Yeah.
And IOTA. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. IO traces tools and something.
Okay, all right. So I'll look into
that. All right. Jason, if you have a couple of minutes, I want to ask you something.
Sure.
Stephen, we'll see you on next week, on Tuesday.
What about the thing on Friday?
And the paper club on Friday.
I haven't received the email yet. Do you
I need to add you to the list, I guess. Yeah.
Did you guys already pick the paper?
Yeah. I'll forward you that email.
All right, thank you.
If I don't send you anything by tomorrow, please remind me.